Honorable mention to the church cookbooks. Oh, that's right. I had all of the Catholic Women's League cookbooks. My mom still gives them. Like, you're right, Jody. That was a real dig. And they had Janice's meatloaf or, you know, Betty's rolled ribs. And then there was like, you know, the one that Barb's sex in a pan to die for, but she didn't call it sex in a pan, but we all knew it was that.
Welcome to Chef Over Your Shoulder, our podcast about the connections we make through cooking. When you pair professional chefs Jody and Kirsty from the Culinary Studio with me, a burn to the bottom of the pan expert, it creates the perfect recipe to demystify the kitchen and bring back the joy of cooking without the pressure. This week, we're talking about an obsession that some of us keep very close to our hearts and our bedsides. We're talking about cookbooks. Are they just a collection of cold hard instructions, or are they something more? We think they're much more. They are diaries, travel logs, and they are filled with cooking inspiration. When you open a great cookbook, you're not just getting a recipe. You're getting the author's passion, techniques, and sometimes their life story. Do you follow the recipe exactly, or do you experiment? This week, Jody and Kirsty are revealing their secrets to finding true inspiration. Funny enough, most of that inspiration comes from old notebooks, family recipe boxes, and a cookbook that doesn't even have recipes in it. Before we hit the books, I did have some homework this week. I made Kirsty's chicken noodle soup. Listen to find out if I had another kitchen disaster and what my family thought. Spoiler alert, the Culinary Studio recipes are easy to follow, so everything turned out all right.
All right, ladies, I have a confession. I bought a cookbook last week.
Another one.
Another one. You know, as this episode goes on, you'll see why Kirsty asked that question. But yes, I bought it because I love the author. She is one of my top five of books that I love. I want to be friends with her.
Oh,
dead or alive, right? Like, some of them are not around anymore, but I consider ourselves friends just by reading those books. So I don't buy them too often, but there is always a reason why I would buy them. And this is because I love the person that wrote it.
Oh, have you started to read it yet?
Yeah. So the other thing is that I think is really funny is, you know, I always have a cookbook beside my bed too, right? For inspiration or if I'm, you know, carrying on. And when I used to teach, I used to ask students that, like when they first started chef school, I'm like, how many of you have cookbooks besides your bed? No one would really raise their hand. And if someone did, I'm like, you're in the right spot. You are going to end up in a kitchen and you are going to do great things within the culinary world. And if they didn't, I'm like, you're not obsessed enough, right? You really have to be obsessed in this industry in order to do what we do.
So I got a question. Where did you get your cookbook?
I got it at Chapters.
Oh, which we still call Chapters, even though it's not called Chapters, and that's fine.
I love it. I do too. We're all showing our age. It's great.
Chapters, Indigo, right? Yes. The reason I did, I was doing some, this is how it happened. I was doing some research for a recipe, Chris, that you had said, hey, can you research this? I read a lot of the same recipe from different people. And then I'm like, I like this. I don't like that. I pick and choose. You kind of already have the basis. And then I go and rewrite the recipe take the best of what I like and that I know is us, add a little sprinkle of more of us into it. Then I'll go and test it, make sure that it works, make sure that it's doing its thing. And while I was doing this research, I ended up on this article about salmon, and I started reading it and I was like, she's got a new cookbook. I'm like, what? Like, when does it come out?
So it was like, start the car.
It was the day that it came out.
Amazing.
I did start the car. I was like, I'm not telling anyone where I'm going. I didn't even tell you because I was kind of embarrassed that I was buying another cookbook, but yeah.
Well, that's fine. I just get to borrow it.
Hey. Yeah. Like they weren't even on the shelves. I'm like looking around. I'm like, you have 11 copies here, ladies and gents. Like, where are they? And they were in the back room, still in the box.
That's amazing. Not the first time you've gotten the first copy of something. I know that. Hey, speaking of recipes and testing, Amy, did you do your homework last week or the week? I can't remember. Did you do your chicken noodle soup homework and how did it go?
I did. It went really well. I was very excited to do it. And my fear or intimidation of chicken noodle soup is gone. So that's really, really great. I did Kirstie's recipe partly because not all the kids were home. And I really think, Jody, they are going, when I told them about both recipes, they love the idea of making the pasta. And even though they're not little people anymore, they still want to make the pasta and throw it in the pot. So I'm holding that one for when everybody is home. But yeah, I made it on a Sunday. And I started out and my first question on the recipe, because you told me and I listened, I made lots of notes. And then, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 days later that I started cooking it. And all of a sudden it occurred to me, is it a raw chicken or not? Because we talked about both and I had a minor panic in the grocery store. It was fine. I just took a deep breath and bought the raw chicken, which turned out to be the right choice, right?
It was the right choice. Yep. Yeah. That's where you're going to get all the flavorful and really tender poultry. Yeah.
Perfect. So then I get it and I get my pot out and I put the chicken in. And so here's my first barrier, which I overcame, no problem. Pot was too small. So then I only did one chicken, but still I filled the water. And then, you know, the chemistry or physical, whatever lesson you take in high school, when you displace the water and put the chicken in, and that didn't work out. So
yeah, you would have ended up with 2 cups of soup.
That would have been stew.
Family of five. Yeah. Yeah. Wrong water displacement pot.
Correct. So I dig up the bigger pot, put it in, put all the things in. And I sent you guys pictures. So I put all the onions and things that help make the broth. And then I left it. And I, unfortunately, Jody didn't read a book. I did do laundry and some other things around the house. But that part was really easy. Now, but I sent you pictures, Kirstie, and you had a little feedback on that.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the pictures. My first few feedbacks. Pro, you got fresh bay leaves and fresh thyme.
I did. I just did it. Thank you.
Get those bay leaves, because you're not going to go through all those in, like, you know, the next week or two. Get them in the freezer.
Oh.
Okay. Interesting that you got curly parsley, which makes me think, did I write the recipe wrong? Should I have clarified flat leaf parsley?
Oh. I didn't even know there was a difference. I was happy I found it in the grocery store and it had stems, because it did say the stems for the recipe. So that's why I picked it.
Yes, the stems are great. Curly parsley, quite a bit stronger. Like, the texture is a bit more rough. Even though you didn't sprinkle your bowls with the parsley,
I didn't. The kids, even though they're not little people, still don't like green things on their things. And so, you know, they were trying a new recipe for me, so I left the green things off.
Sorry, I'm gonna say this curly parsley tracks with Amy not really cooking, right? Because we're all from the same vintage. We grew up in, you know, 80s, early 90s. We only had curly parsley. So that's all she would see.
Yeah.
We were introduced to flat leaf parsley in chef school, and it was a revelation. And it really has, like, when we order from a supplier and get curly parsley, we're like, what are we in 1984? Like, bring us back to 2024 with flat leaf. So now that you know, we'll show you what it looks like. And then you're going to see it everywhere. Once you know what it is, it's like when you said, I'm shocked that it's in a grocery store. It is in every grocery store nowadays. Yeah.
I'm like, it's everywhere. She walked right by it. It's like lettuce, parsley.
It was probably right beside it too, curly and flat. Probably right beside. I was just excited I found it. I felt pretty proud.
You're right, though, Jody. It tracks with probably my grandmother's recipe, too. Like, she garnished her ham platters and everything with curly parsley.
I was keeping it, you know, original, and that's where I was going.
And you know what? The only other thing I have to say is that you went through more work than you needed to. If we look at this picture here, it's just a whole chicken, which is great, but all those chopped onions, unnecessary, because we're just going to strain them out anyways. I just take an onion or two and cut it in half to extract the flavor and make it less oniony. Keep that nice and subtle.
That is a great tip, because of course, on the other side, once the chicken was done, having to take all of the vegetables we used to make the broth out, that wasn't as easy with all the little pieces.
Exactly. So now you know.
I'm going to give a couple tips. The first one is the word of the day, especially when you're making stock, is mirepoix. Mirepoix means onions, carrots, celery. It's used first and foremost, like at the beginning stages of cooking. You made a broth, which is, you know, the sister, brother, cousin, best friend of a stock. and you're using whole vegetables because you're cooking it longer. So the longer you cook, the larger they can be. And so there's no reason that you'd waste your knife skills. And those knife skills are stellar, I'm saying. Take one of our knife skills classes. I say that again with love, right? You can really just, you know, you peel it, you cut it in half or cut it in quarters, and that's it. You want them to be very large because they're going to cook for a long time. The smaller they are, they'll like just turn to mush and turn the color of your stock. That was the first thing. What was my, I had a second thing. I think it was the knife skills. I think my second thing is the knife skills. And in mirepoix, after you have the stock, you have the soup, and you use mirepoix as well. At that time, you have to think about, what am I wanting from it, right? Always asking, what's the end result? In a soup, you're going to eat it. So the size of it should be the size that fits on a spoon. You want everything on a spoon.
Okay, I love it. That's such great advice. And now I feel even more excited to do it again, because I just gained some time back, which is exciting.
I love that you said you're going to do it again. You're not discouraged by it, right? It wasn't perfect. It was delicious. And each time you do something, and Kirstie and I are the same way, each time we make something, we learn something new. So when we test recipes, we do it that initial time, then we'll do it a second time, we'll tweak, we'll, you know, sleep on it, think about it. Yeah, and we do are up at like 2 a.m. thinking about, did I make that adobo right? And you're like, no, I should try it this way. And then we will do it again and become experts, tweak it to our palate and enjoy it.
Well, and that, you're right about the learning. The other thing I learned was, so after I took the chicken out and let it cool, and then I put the vegetables in that we were going to eat, I should have put them in sooner. So I put the carrots in, not enough time to marry with everything else and what time we had to eat and all of the things. So that's the one thing I realized, is that the vegetables take longer to cook than I anticipated. But once we were all done, and I made bread, because I do actually make bread. That is one thing I do. So that was fun. But I loved pouring it over the noodles. I thought, what a great way to serve it, and what a great way to distribute it properly, because you're not trying to dig out the right number of noodles to match the chicken and the vegetables and the broth. And I just loved it. It was so much fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm all about the ratios. Like, if I go for like a bowl of pho, I'm just like, oh, Lord, I need an extra like half order of noodles. It's just not working.
Yes. And I do, too. I like it to be full, I think, my soup.
Yeah. Yeah. Kirstie's all about the ratios. When she said it, I was about to say the same thing. I'm like, every meal she has, if the ratio's not right, like, that's a challenge about going out. If you like, I just need a little bit more sauce than that half ounce that they put on my plate. Right. I want a little bit of that in each bite. Yeah. So that's why we like to cook at home, and we like to cook for people. It's all about the ratios and perfect textures as well.
Well, and it turned out great at the end. Everybody loved it. Stephen said it didn't taste like water. It tasted fantastic. So I felt pretty proud of myself for that.
We're so proud of you, too. We're so proud of you.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, it was good. And I can't wait to kind of keep going. The homework thing's been great for me, because it gives me one thing to do and I can work my way through it. And it's been good. And everybody's involved in our household. They know I'm doing it, and they're curious, or they want to help, or they want to try it. So far, so good. And I'm excited for the next homework, which who knows where that may lead us today, because we're talking about cookbooks. So that could lead us anywhere. And sort of how we started talking about cookbooks was a little bit how we started the podcast. When you're saying, what do you mean you don't cook? And do you have cookbooks? And I said, yes, I have a ton of them, but I barely use them. And I don't know where that stems from, but I will tell you my personal philosophy right now on cookbooks is, every time I would open them, if they had more than 5 ingredients or 3 steps, I just turn the page. So really, that's probably why I don't use them. I have a few where I have like one, and we can get into some of them, because I sent you a picture of my old school cookbooks. But we're excited to sort of just talk about the cookbooks we have, the cookbooks we use, your recommendations, but also why we love them if maybe we don't cook with them. Because, I mean, I love a good coffee table book no matter what. So I have a few beautiful cookbooks that I just have because they're beautiful.
Fair enough. Yeah. I've got a cookbook obsession.
I kind of gathered that.
Yeah. You could run this whole podcast, I feel, Jody.
Yeah, it's kind of bad, right? Like, I've been talking about it for years. It needs its own Dewey Decimal System. When I was a young apprentice, I would say, right? Like, that's what you are when you're in a kitchen, in a professional kitchen, you're the apprentice. And I would everything, anything. Like I'm looking at all, I'm doing single subject, I'm doing all of this stuff. I'm like, you know, just on, like I noticed in your collection, you've got a book just on risotto, and you've mentioned before how much you love risotto, right? And I'm like, I want to just flip through it because I'm intrigued by how many variations of risotto, like, are you making, right? Like, how did it become a whole book?
I made none of them because I don't, but it's one of my pretty ones that I like to look at.
And sorry, Joan, can I interject quickly? Speaking of risotto, it is the type of recipe that I think is difficult to read in a cookbook. Remember our very first cooking class, and my brother took it and he said, oh, wow, I've been making risotto wrong this whole time. And I was like, yeah, I didn't really want to tell, because he just read it. He read the instructions, but that it's hard to risotto, Italian food in general, it's hard to sometimes translate from page to plate.
And risotto is not only a dish, it's a method.
Ooh, I like that. That's good. So did you like any of the other cookbooks in the picture or have any questions?
Yeah, I did note the Campbell's soup because you talk about tomato, you talk about tomato soup and burning tomato soup, but now you know how to make a chicken noodle soup. So move over, Campbell's. Amy's soups are coming into the play, right?
Look out. We're coming in. I don't need you anymore. That's a really old one. I think I took that one to university with me.
So the thing I like about that one is that we all grew up in, Chris, what do we call it? The 80s meal, right? Like that was a can of cream of mushroom soup, pork chops. In my house, it was buttered noodles.
Yep. Peas, usually frozen peas.
Or yeah, because it was usually a frozen vegetable or a canned vegetable, because they weren't always, it wasn't like it is now, right? Like there wasn't those, all those fresh vegetables, or they were more expensive, or I don't remember. And my mom cooked it in an electric frying pan. Again, our vintage, when we were kids, there was certain recipes that were, would be considered now viral, that everyone had that version of.
Yes. Well, and I actually call it my 1950s casserole, and my neighbor loves this because it's just whatever's in the fridge, and it's like rice, whatever tomatoes, not whatever Campbell's soup base that I have, the frozen peas and carrots, and like probably leftover cold turkey or something. And I put it all in there, I put it in the oven, it's a 1950s casserole. And it kind of stems from that. That's kind of how I learned that, right?
Yeah.
So tell me what is your most used cookbook? Because we talk about our favorites and you have a wall, and I know you use tons of them, but because you're so experienced and you create your own recipes and things like that, do you still go to a cookbook for a recipe, or is it more, like you said, Jody, research?
It can be a bit of both. My first answer, Joe, you probably are going to know this. I reached to Edna. I don't know. And it's the cookbook that does read like a novel for me. I use cookbooks more so for inspiration. And it was my first instinct. It's not maybe always my first answer. I have other ones, but when you add, if I could, you know, choose one. And, you know, I got all three as a gift from my mom, and they're all inscribed. And yeah, you know, from Wordsworth Books, Uptown Waterloo, right? Like it's just got, and, you know, Jody and I had that opportunity to go to Edna's cottage posthumously, but yet we were able to kind of feel her. And we often do call ourselves kind of omas or grandmas in training, very much how Edna cooked. So that's my first instinct answer.
Aww.
And we've talked about Edna before. Like we're on a first name basis with her. She'd be like 120 now or something. But when we've talked about this before, because someone was like, who would you want to eat with, dead or alive? And we had said Edna, because I think she'd be a riot, right? She moved in. If you don't really know her, like, we'll tell you, she moved into a Mennonite home, someone that was progressive in the Mennonite community around Waterloo region that was willing to take her in. And when she was there, she learned how to make the food, how to cook the food. And that's how these books came out, right? So in the book, she talks about her friends that she met, and she talks about the kids, and the kids that are in the book, their names have been changed, but we met one of them, and we had a dinner where he was our guest, and he spoke about her the whole night and his memories. He was just a little boy, but it was a really cool experience.
From a cookbook standpoint, though, I feel like sometimes you kind of have to know a little bit in the kitchen, because she just sort of scribbled out the method. Sometimes even I'm like, oh Lord, what am I supposed to do here? Like, did she mean that? So I don't know. So it is kind of a guessing game sometimes, but that makes it interesting.
It sounds so, I can't wait to read it, and I can't wait to give that a try for sure.
I want to know what Jody's Desert Island Cookbook would be out of her. How many do you think you have? It's got to be hundreds for sure.
My desert island. So for me, it's not a cookbook at all. It's the flavor Bible.
I thought you were going to say that. Yeah.
I own two copies. I don't know why. I think because I thought I lost one for a bit, or I wanted one at work and one at home because I just reference it and look for it all the time.
I think that's what it was. You needed two.
So I saw the flavor Bible on your list of recommended cookbooks from your blog, and I was very intrigued and very curious because it really isn't recipes, right?
Yeah. So let's say you're like, give me something.
Mushrooms.
All right. So in this book that I'm going to look up, like an encyclopedia.
Like a game show. You're next, Amy. You're next. It's super fun.
You can see this isn't planned because I have to go find it. What kind of mushroom? Do you have a specific mushroom?
Shiitake.
Okay. So now I'm going to find specifically shiitake mushrooms. And then it tells you what they pair well with, what amplifies them, what really works well. So shiitake, you've got anchovies, asparagus, bacon, basil, bell peppers, brandy, butter, cabbage, celery root, chicken, chili peppers, chives, cod, coriander, cream cheese, eggplant. I can't continue. Like, we're going to be here all day.
Yeah, the point is I've got shiitakes in my fridge, and now I know that if I have anchovies and cream in a box of pasta, it's going to work.
Yeah. Or you could, you know, cook them and drizzle some balsamic on them and serve them with on a bed of spinach, right? Like that's what's in here. And it's older. What it does is it inspires, it pushes my recipes, elevates them. And I have to say, like, I'm all about layering flavors, and it probably came from this. Like, Kirsty knows if I've got a lemon, what am I doing?
You're zesting it.
I'm zesting 100%. I'm using the zest whether it calls for it or not, because it's layering the flavor. My newest obsession, and I don't know where it came from or why, probably because I love smoking and barbecue. If I'm going to use an onion, let's bring out some onion powder, right? Like let's kind of layer them in different ways, introduce them in different kind of applications or different mediums, would you call that? And just really, really round out the flavors that way. So for me, and it's like anyone else, they're like going to think I'm a real weirdo because it's not recipes at all.
But I kind of like that. I thought, you know, because when we cleaned out my pantry and the spices, and now I have them all organized, I still am not overly familiar with the combinations or what to do, but what a great tool.
Empowering.
It's very empowering. I've got this and this, and this is in the fridge. That's going to give me some direction and also some freedom and creativity to just make something. I think I'm very interested in having a look at that one for sure.
I will get you a little card. You can fill it out, sign your name, and there'll be a due date on when to return it. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that one. And so we're talking about, you know, your favorite cookbooks and what I use cookbooks for and how I don't always use them. But I want to talk a little bit about you guys, because Jody, you talked about in the beginning reading various recipes from various people in different cookbooks and then going back, and you guys together make your own creations. And we've talked about this a little bit, but tell me about your aspirations for your own cookbook.
Oh Lord, I feel like it's all up here, Amy, right? It's just like, you know, we've been working on a cookbook for 15 years and it just, you know, life gets busy, I guess. But I, you know, Jody's, I'll let you say the words, Jody, right? You're not going to the grave or something.
I've said this before, and I know this is like pretty aggressive, but if I'm on my deathbed and I haven't written a cookbook, I'll feel like something was missing. I honestly, like, I'm like, that's, I just want a cookbook. I don't, I don't need the, like, I do want the accolades. I want it to
get cash, baby. People sell it.
Yeah. But you don't write it for that.
No.
You write it out of pure passion, right? Like when someone was like, they're like, oh, I made your meatloaf recipe the other day. I want to talk for 20 minutes about what you did and how you did and how you liked it and what went wrong, right? Like, that's what I want, right? I had a friend at the gym the other day that used our rib recipe that's on our blog, which is a starting point, right? Yep. That's the springboard. And he was like, they burnt. I'm like, And the reason that they did is like, when you cook them that last bit, he's like, I flip them down. I'm like, oh, you've got all of that sugary, sugary barbecue sauce that's right in the line of fire, essentially, that needs to be flipped up because you want it to be all sticky. I'm like, did the recipe say that? And he was like, I did it wrong. He took full ownership, went back to the recipe. There was a photo, but I didn't write it in. So then I'm like, perfect. I'm going to then redo it. But I loved, and he was like, I'm sorry, I don't want to refilm. I'm like, no, I love talking about our recipes. I love when the successes. I don't want you to have failures, but it just makes us better teachers and better writers.
Wow, I love that. I mean, the irony is that if you write it for passion, I don't think you have to worry about people wanting to read it, because they will want to, because the passion will come through the pages.
I hope so.
I think you, in your other podcast, you talk to so many phenomenal entrepreneurs and whatnot. And a common thread is often like, you know, standing in your own way, right? And I think that's how it's foreign territory for us. And the time will come where we're, okay, it's time. We feel ready. We feel empowered. And so, yeah, thanks for asking.
Well, I'm excited because I think that as we do this and as you continue to expand your classes and the blog and people give you feedback, it is such a pathway to put it all in a book for all of us to have and pass it along, I think, too.
That's key word, pass along, right? Some of our cookbooks are old and dusty for good reason, right?
They are. Yeah. And I think that that's part of the joy of it, is that you keep memories in your kitchen from somebody else. And I like that part.
Like your grandma's book, Jody, or like, right. Like that, these are books too, right? The box of recipes.
Oh,
and like
the box. Right? Yes.
Even our own books. Like I first met Jody and she had that green shamrock notebook. I have my black one, right? And it's recipes we started jotting down as even teenagers, right? So,
oh, you could have like a little teenage section. I think that would be fantastic.
Well, mine is like, it was from Old Navy back in the day. So it's not like, we're not that old, right? We're old enough to be around in the Old Navy days. But what this was that when you're an apprentice again, you go into different kitchens and they might tell you a recipe, or you might use a recipe, and then they want you to remember it, and or you're inspired by it. So Kirstie and I, we are some of the chefs that we worked under, and they're different. They're definitely complementary. Kirstie, worked under some very fantastic chefs that had more Asian background, right? Sushi making. She'd make sushi every day, or talked about cooking sushi rice. She was the one who taught me how to make that, right? I was drawn, and I lived over in Germany for a while. I traveled to Spain many times, and I'm drawn to those types of food. And so that is, there's that definitely influence in our recipes and in our methods and the way they cook. And it's each one is individual, because you learn so much along the way. And these books kind of are a sum of who we become as chefs. Yeah, these are some of our parts in professional kitchens.
They're diaries, right? They're journals. You know, I've got like, I do have Jody, and I don't know where my book is right now, but it's just like a same similar thing, has a big I Love Birkenstock sticker on it, and it has like Jody and Kirstie, 2005 or 2006, fresh pasta experiment. And so it's like, I can, and then I'm like, if I didn't write that down, which I remember that day now, you probably don't even know what I'm talking about, right? I'm still living at home, for crying out loud.
I do remember that, because we were nervous about making it. We had never really made it in chef school once. We were in our mom's kitchen. And as we sat and ate it, we were like, okay, now drizzle some olive oil on it. And we're like, whoa, that really made a difference, just finishing with a little olive oil. And we've carried it through our, you know, we often talk about that.
I'm feeling emotional. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Cookbooks, I think, are that they can be emotional, right? They transport you just like a meal. A cookbook can take you back to a place as well, right? Jerusalem is another. I don't want to not end this without talking about Jerusalem, the Ottolenghi collections, Jody. Those took the world by storm, and they really changed the way I think both you and I looked at ingredients. You know, we were making the hummus for the first time from dried chickpeas. We were, you know, learning about spices that are just everyday to us now, like Aleppo pepper, you know, that sort of thing. That those cookbooks really, we became kind of a phenomenon among chefs, among like any chef friend that I talk about, they have Jerusalem, and it changed them.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I saw that on your list too. I obviously had not heard of it, but
it's in my car. Like, that's the one. Like, you have cookbooks by your bed, Jody. Mine are in my car. Cookbooks and magazine, because I'm often like dropping a kid off, and then I gotta wait. So that's what I'm doing. That's where my cookbooks are stored sometimes.
I love it.
The books that we're drawn to now, like Kenji Lopez, for me too, because it's like so much science based. It's like, when you're tempering, you know, you talk about the spices you have in your cupboard, and we talk about, you know, water soluble properties or fat soluble properties. I love the science. I love like, why should I heat it up? And it's just 30 seconds because it will burn otherwise.
So because we're trying to keep these, you know, to the length of a meal, I think we'll stop there, because I'm already so inspired by all of the things you've talked about.
Can I add one more?
Except that Kirsty has one more to say.
we gotta add Marcella Hazan. If we're gonna talk about Edna Stabler, we're gonna talk about the godmother of Italian cooking.
Honorable mention to the church cookbooks. Come on,
oh,
right?
That's right. I had all of the Catholic Women's League cookbooks. My mom still gives them. Like, you're right, Jody. That was a real dig.
And well, no, it's not, because you had them. Your grandma has them, and they had Janice's meatloaf, or, you know, Betty's rolled ribs. And then there was, like, you know, the one that Barb's sex in a pan to die for, but she didn't call it sex in a pan, but we all knew it was that. That was
yeah.
Right. You can't call that in a cookbook or a church cookbook.
No. In a church cookbook. Yeah. That's so funny. That's so true. I think, yes. And they were kind of printed the same way every time.
Yeah.
And,
no photographs.
Yeah.
Sorry. This podcast is the length of a meal. And dessert.
And dessert. See, there you go. It's fine. So we're going to obviously include all of those recommendations in the show notes, but then in a blog that accompanies the podcast, because then everybody else, I hope, can be as inspired as I am.
And you got to get yourself to Jody's library and check out a cookbook today.
Thank you for joining us in the kitchen today. If you'd like to know more about what we talked about, including recipes, recommendations, and links to Jody and Kirsty's full selection of online classes, you can find everything in the show notes or visit the Culinary Studio website. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to the podcast and take a moment to leave us a review. Chef Over Your Shoulder is a member of the Bespoke Productions Hub podcast network. Happy cooking.